Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. We are now nearly 2 years into the Russia-Ukraine war, and things seem to have ground down to something like a stalemate. Initially, the shock of the invasion led to a surge in support for President Volodymyr Zelensky, both at home and abroad. He could pretty much do no wrong. But Ukrainian politics is notoriously cutthroat, and it seems to be back. Criticism of the president and the war at home is on the rise. The last Ukrainian politician we had on this show was called Inna Sovsun. She was an MP loyal to the Zelensky project. We are doing something a little bit different today. We're going to talk to someone called Oleksiy Arestovych. He was, in fact, a spokesman for the Zelensky government. He became a household name in Ukraine with his positive nightly briefings on the progress of the war. They called him the therapist in chief. And at one point, his poll ratings were almost as high as the president himself. Since then, he's fallen out with his old boss and has become a fierce critic with plans to run for president himself. He's even left the country, fearing he would be arrested if he remained, so he joins us from the United States. I should say this is his first Western interview since turning against the Zelensky project. Mr. Arestovych, welcome to Unheard.
Thank you so much.
So give us the big picture. It's an extraordinary change of heart from you since the beginning of the war. Take us back to those early months when you were the spokesman for the Zelensky government. At that point, I presume you were a loyal supporter of him and thought that the government's approach to the war was good?
In fact, I'm not a main critic of President Zelensky himself. I'm criticizing the Ukrainian system. Okay. System itself. What we say is we call this system from the big letter S, which is mean the corrupted system, which is provide our country like a system who can't win this war in this way if we will not change it. I am not in personal war with President Zelensky. I'm criticizing the system and his politics.
But so when you were speaking for the government, did you have more confidence in the system then?
I was a spokesperson of the office of the president, not of the government. It's a little different one, but it's yes. For me, this when the war started, was the main motivation was to hold our people, to not be afraid about this invasion, and to stay strong for the victory. I am still in this same position, but I'm a professional military. And I can see what is, I've fought more than 2 years in this war, previous time. And I completely understand what we have to do, what we're not doing now, right now, for win this war, or not for, even for lose this war. Because Mr. Putin, it's easy to understand, to compare in what is Mr. Putin doing now. A year and a half, he take four principal strategical decisions, which is giving him superiority if we compare it with Ukrainian position. First of all, he managed to change this war from the Russian-Ukrainian war, like in the highest frame. Now it is war for global South with global West. And we see like BRICS organizations multiplied this first January, New Year, and the Saudi Arabia, United Emirates, and Iran, and other countries.
The BRICS, getting that's the, just yeah, for the our BRICS, audience, yes. You mean the Brazil, Russia, India, China,
South
Africa.
Yes, they get in this organization, and it's a so-called anti-West bloc, if we spoke informally. This changes the frame, give them diplomacy and political abilities they doesn't have in the beginning of the war, when they're all world condemned this invasion. Putin managed to avoid sanctions because of this change in this frame. And this avoiding of sanctions, the system of avoiding of sanctions, was the second strategical decision which Putin made. The third part, he managed to recruit in his military industry and multiplied the production of this industry for many times. We spoke about Russia has could insufficient funds of the cruise missiles, which is a strike in Ukraine, but not. They managed to produce these cruise missiles and like Kinjal, something like this, ballistic missile. And main problem, in the Kinjal, we found 77 details, which is produced by the United States and other Western countries. So it means the system of avoidance of sanctions getting very properly for them. And the fourth strategical decision, it was to create a system of motivations for Russian people to get in the war. 14,000 Russian recruits getting every month to the recruiting centers. And Putin now doesn't need mobilization. He didn't need mobilizations because he has a lot of voluntary recruitment people, which is completely different with the Ukrainian system. Now we try to provide a huge mobilization as a half of the million personnel, and we face some obstacles, serious obstacles with motivations of people, something like this.
Do you believe that those four things mean that Russia and Mr. Putin are in a different position now to what they were when you were working for Volodymyr Zelensky at the start of the war?
Absolutely. They are now in a much better position than the war started. In the first 2 months, we break up this plan of invasion and provide huge losses for Russian elite troops, which is have to make this shock and wave operation to hold Ukraine for 3 days or for 1 week. And they faced to necessary to change strategy. They manage this.
So now sorry to interrupt, but just to be clear, you believe that Russia's strategy in those early weeks was to try to take the whole of Ukraine? Do you believe that? Because that's
not whole Ukraine, but this nine directions of the invasion: Kharkov, Kyiv, Sumy, Mykolaiv, Odessa, Zaporizhia, Mariupol. The only success they have is they managed to catch Mariupol.
And the fact that they were not successful is credit to Ukraine then for repelling them.
Yes, but we repelling and throughout day from the north of this our country, from the Kyiv, Sumy, and Kharkiv region, as another one, Chernihiv. But now they change this after these four strategical moves. They change the strategy, and now it looks quite successful if we see on the main goals of Russian policy. Not for the winning Avdiivka, which they can't to do, but for this suppression they moved on Ukrainian on the West, and these changes and allies links which they built with the anti-colonial narrative with the global source. This looks quite successful. For us, for me, for Ukraine, why I criticize Mr. Zelensky policy and our system, how our system works, mostly it's touched this last 2 points. First of all, it's a system of motivation for our people to fight and their military production and industry. We completely understand we can't compare in with Russia because it's a huge country with a lot of resources, but we do not do necessary what we can to do. Today we have Ukraine.
Before we get into what Ukraine should do, just elaborate for us a little bit. What do you think happens next if there is no change to the system? Do you suggest that Russia will make further territorial gains inside Ukraine, or do you think it will be fixed at roughly the front that it is at the moment? Or what's your prediction for what happens next?
I don't think our most dangerous is losing more territory. Our most dangerous is losing Western support now in the United States to deep involved in the system of making decision for Ukrainian military and financial aid. And I found this very, very dangerous and non-stable position because Americans, both Democrats, both Republicans, is in the very heavy ideological conflict about Ukrainian question and other type of question, which is linked to president's election in the United States. And I completely understand how it's fragile the question of Ukrainian assistance.
So what happens to Ukraine then if American support falls away, either through a change of administration or because the current administration loses enthusiasm?
So the stopping of financial, it's mean the macro, we lost the macroeconomical stability. It means the social payment, pensions and something like this to provide social aid for our people. And it's mean we have to start to insufficient our gold and currency deposits, our national bank. It's mean the hryvnia, which is getting in inflations. And in front line, it's mean we start to lose the territory because Russians still have a superiority in artillery shells, number of shells, rockets, and something like this, personal, armored carrier, tanks, and that's all. And it's mean this, we have two main forces which is start to damage the building of Ukrainian statement. It's interior problems and the Russian suppression. It's a very dangerous situation.
So you think it's a sort of twin threat, then there would be internal fragility, maybe economic turmoil, people not getting their support payments, and then that would lead to territorial losses as well.
Absolutely. And for me, if we're thinking in the power, in the way of the power, it's meant to a legacy of the legitimation of our power of President Zelensky and his political party start to get him down. It's another dangerous step because in the war, the power government have to create a not unpopular decision, like a mobilization, like a financial cutting or something like this. And it could be provided when you have a great legitimations. If you have low legitimations, it's very difficult to provide even popular decision. Unpopular, it's more and more difficult.
How soon do you think this crisis point might come?
It completely depends if America and Europe get into the decision about to provide us a financial and military aid. Now we see from Washington here some positive news. The Republicans and Democrats could make decisions about the south border of the United States, and it's mean they have to make decision about Ukrainian aid. But what kind of aid, what amount of this aid, what part of it will be financial and what part of it will be military of this aid, it's non-asked question still. So if the scenario will be worst, I think it will be not immediately collapse of front line or interior Ukrainian situation. I think it will be getting worse and worse half of year, probably. I completely understand, as I think, the Mr. Putin goal. He had to show United States and Europe, collective West, his main narrative, to provide aid for Ukraine is completely unprofit things. And he want to came for the beginning of the real president campaign in United States to prove to United States and collective West to cut this Ukrainian aid. And to get into the negotiations with us from the very strong position. They need most weakness position for Ukraine and the most strong position for Russia, just, I think, for the August or September. And the last part of rolling of presidential election in the United States. The main goal, I think, to win Mr. Trump here, because he strictly believed that Mr. Trump will be more polite with Mr. Putin and suppress Ukraine for there's some Minsk III agreement, something like this.
There's a lot of different things there that I just want to take a bit of time to unpack.
Yeah.
So the first is just to finish on this American aspect. So whether it's the forthcoming election or changing politics, at some point, the level of support that is being provided to Ukraine cannot go on forever. That I think most people would agree with that. So what is your sort of long-term solution to that? Instead of just trying to get the Americans to extend their support and extend it again, what does a good long-term settlement look like?
My decision is self-evolution for Ukraine. We have to do two things, to provide more effectively politics, both in social aspects, military aspects, economical aspects, something like this, to fight corruptions, and to get in better our partnership abilities with Collective West. Because for me, one of the main mistakes of the President Zelensky, it was hold the this emotional policy for like a main argument for West to suppress emotion. After, I think, the Vilnius summits, we have to change NATO summit, we have to change this policy. And we have to put calculator between our and Collective West and start to think what is the real profit cooperations we could done. For United States, it mostly is a titanium industry and lithium industry, which is the very interesting in Ukraine, but I see nothing for that. So my main idea, we had to start to be interesting for the West, not of the spoken of the values or ideas or democracy or something like this, just material profit. What the West could have from the Ukrainian and West partnership. I mean, industry, agricultural, I mean, what we have to calculate what we could do real profit for the collective West.
I mean, there has been talk that there are a lot of Western corporations already lining up for the reconstruction era. There was a conference about the new reconstructed Ukraine. I think it took place in Switzerland. A lot of big companies were present. Is that not the Zelensky approach, though, to be attractive to big Western corporations as a kind of home and to ally fully with the West? I thought you had a slightly different kind of approach to the West and were thinking more of Ukraine as a halfway house between the West and the rest of the world.
We have some problems with them because talking about reconstruction is the post-war era. And now we have to hold the war before this. And this is speaking about investment in a post-war Ukraine. We have some list of wishes on both sides, which is could be done right now. And I know this, first of all, it's a military industry cooperation. It's not only Collective West, in some states of the East Europe, like Poland, like a Czech Republic, like Romania and something like this, which completely understand what does Russian invasions mean. They have the same history and same understanding with Ukraine. We don't do enough even for that, even production of military equipment with our nearest neighbors. We have a conflict, custom conflict with Poland,
which is grain.
Yes, absolutely. Grain and something like this. And we make a lot of mistakes, which is problematizing our partnership with this, our nearest neighbors and with the both with the United States, both with another countries. So it's policy of emotions have to be changed of policy of profit and senses.
Okay. So I think I understand that. So let's turn to internal Ukraine politics for a moment. You mentioned mobilization or conscription, this question of where the fighters are going to come from. I understand that's been quite controversial already in Ukraine. What's your view on that? How many people in Ukraine do you think have died? How many more are needed? And where are they going to come from?
It's difficult to say how many people died because it's both military and civil people. We still do not, nobody knows how many people die in Mariupol. And the amounts, the sources say, it's from 25 to 100 and half people died just in Mariupol, civilian people. For military, it's difficult to say. I could say we have more than probably like one for four. Comparing with Russia losses, if we count in dead people and the killed in action personnel, and
so you think four times as many Russians have died as Ukrainians?
Four times we die. Yes. I say it about this, but it's not enough for us to enough. If it could be said about dead people, it's have to be 1 to 7. 1 to 4, it's not enough for hold the situation. This is a problem because Russians have superiority in personnel.
So is Ukraine running low on troops?
No, low on troops. A problem from our mobilization, which is now tried to do, this is when I was in office, I hear them 4.5 billion men avoid to get into the recruiting center, just not for recruiting, just for checking this personality and personal data. And this means the interior policy, the policy which is we motivate our government, motivate people for the war, is not successful because of the 4.5 million. It's mean half of the all adult men population of Ukraine. This is a problem. Now we have to.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand. So 4.5 million. What was the 4.5 million?
Men of Ukraine, which is a half of the men population of Ukraine, do not want to get in the recruiting center to give their dates. It's not mean they will be recruitment. They not even want to check this their personal date.
4.5 million people have refused to give their information because it means they could be called up to the front.
Yes. This is a problem. And now we have to recruit half of the billion. The project of the drift of the law contained mostly the repression motivation, not positive motivation for recruitment. I was one of the public speaking person who start to ring the bell about this question, and now the Verkhovna Rada declined this draft and start to make new one, which is have to contain this positive motivation. I don't know what they can't to manage, but we will see. Okay.
Well, what and, you tell me? I mean, now's the opportunity. What is the positive motivation to take up arms and go to the front?
If we could say about principle, it's have to be man-centric person, for human-centric person. In the focus of this motivation system have to be one person who changed his fate for the get into the war. He have to be well recruitment, well selection, well trained, and well using in the front of line. Because our army, you know, most of this in a lot of aspects is still old Soviet army, which is thinking about personal like Russian thinking, who have to go forward and die. For us, it's completely unsuitable system to provide the war because we have a lot less personnel than Russian, and we in a different way we thinking about our people. We have to change government system for recruitment. We have to change the using people in the just in the armed forces, and now it's not human centric. Well, personal centric system. It's effects system or aid centric system. If we need this, I don't know, this forest, we have to get and take this forest.
I mean, it's quite hard to see how you have a human centric recruitment system to potentially go to your death in a war.
Yes. I mean, the person who get into the army have to understand that he will be selected, trained it, and use it most profit way, and his family will be completely defend from some problems, like if he die or miss an action or he will be wounded.
I see. So what you're saying is, if incoming recruits felt confident that they would be used efficiently, and felt that the military leadership was more competent, and also that there was greater advantages such as maybe increased money for families in case of difficulty, recruitment would be higher.
Absolutely, because our people completely, every Ukrainians have relatives in the armed forces. So we completely understand what is going on.
I have to ask one thing, which is that why are you not in the front? I mean, you're in America now. I guess for people watching back home, they might say it's all very well for him. Why doesn't he go to the front?
This is a big problem because they have some criminal investigations against me in Ukraine. And I provide them from there some stupid manners from my seminars, which is conducting like my online school, when I say it's about men and women relationship and move to act some stupid men who do not look like women's. The Irina Sovsun, you have this before, getting to me to the national police from criminal investigations, just cut one sentence when I making these seminars, and says Aristovich is completely against women and he have to be holded. And after that, they collected 29 members of parliament, which is from the Tribune of Verkhovna Rada, says Aristovich have to be arrested immediately after he came back in Ukraine. And Secretary of our Security Council says Aristovich not proved, just not proved. Aristovich is a Russian spy and have to be arrested by Security Service of Ukraine when they came in Ukraine.
So you think it's a political prosecution?
I think it's a completely political prosecution. So I can get in Ukraine, but I think it's nobody giving me ability to get to the armed forces.
And just to be clear, those people who do say you have connections to Russia or you're in some way sympathetic to the Russian side, you have no contact with anyone inside the Russian Federation?
No, nobody. Only Russian oppositions here in the West. Problem is them. I'm not Russian sympathetic. I just want to be Ukraine to be European nation, a European army. And when I was in office, I was the first person who says not any torture or things for the Russian prisoners of war. We have to provide a European type war. We have to be European nation and European army. And this is a lot of person who get in the emotional trauma from the war, and some politicians from Ukraine who try to make a policy on the hate for the war, emotional trauma of the war, says Arestovich is a pro-Russian politic in Ukraine, which is completely stupid things. I fight with the Russians more than 2 years on the front line. Could you imagine the Russian spy who fighting against Russia troops on the front lines? Something terrible. So it's difficult for me. I want to be in my country and with my country, with my people, because if you spoke for the people, for your people, and if you criticized both government and people, you have to sit in on the same bombs when the Russians provide on the scene. But I can't to come back for Ukraine because of this. And I have two criminal investigations right now. This is from my political position, this is a problem.
Okay, I understand that. So if we look at the last year, a lot of what we've been hearing about in the West has been the counteroffensive. It was going to be a spring offensive, and then it became a summer offensive, and then we weren't sure what happened. What is your view of what went wrong there? Were the goals set by Volodymyr Zelensky the wrong ones? I believe that the full liberation of Crimea is still part of his plan. What did he get wrong?
We have no enough equipment for this counteroffensive, for these ambitions, aims, because without superiority in artillery and without air superiority or enough air support, it was impossible to get in Crimea. We can do some very profit operative aim like a holding Takhmak, which is the cross line for the railways, which is the main line of supply of Russian forces in the source, both with the Crimea bridge, because all Russian support just hold on to two lines. It's railway from Donetsk to Takhmak, and the railway from Crimea railway bridge. And our decision was to cut one of this line. It was enough to start to collapse the Russian defense, but we can't move even that. The Takhmak stay for the 18 kilometers from us. One of the main mistake what we done, send a lot of troops for the Bakhmut. First of all, for defense, and first of all, to recapture the Bakhmut, this was a problem. I think if we get in these troops on the source front, we could hold the Takhmak. And it was a completely enough and successful aim for our counteroffensive. But for the political reasons, because Bakhmut was proclaimed like a fortress of Bakhmut, it was a huge motivation project for office of the president. They sent a lot of troops for the east, and this troops was not enough for Seoul's front
line.
This was a mistake.
Would you have let Bakhmut fall much earlier then? Is that what you would have done?
Yes. No, I think we have to defend Bakhmut for thumb line. It was profit to insufficient Russian offensive. But when the Bakhmut was surrounded, we're still sending the troops inside of Bakhmut, which is completely unprofit. And we see this in the comparing the losses on the both sides. When the defense was successful, Russian lost 7-10 personnel from our one. And after they surround the Bakhmut, it start to be 1-1. And we still start to send the troops and insufficient our reserves, which have to be reused in the front line, in the source front.
Just so I'm clear, at the point that it was surrounded, you would have said enough. You think
enough?
That,
yes,
and
get
with,
and
withdraw
and hold the withdrawal and hold new line of defense. In fact, one of the main mistakes is just would not make a strategical fortification for the whole front line, like Russians do when they do the Surovikin line, so call it in the source front. We see what happened. We just it was a completely huge and difficult decision to get in through, but we get through. And if we make same fortification in our front line, which is start to be preparing year and a half before this moment, I think it will be much better and more defense and more stability on the front line for our troops.
Okay, so there's some quite specific things there. You take issue with the defense of Bakhmut, with the mobilization plan, with the way the lines were defended. Big picture, do you think retaking Crimea should be a goal at all of the Ukrainian government?
It's more profit goal than liberate Donbass, because Donbass it's a near and close for Russia region, which is 10 years under the occupation, and they get in the generation which is never living in Ukraine. It's like for Great Britain, it's like a North Ireland. It's something like this, like Ulster problem could be. And for Crimea, it's a question of our and the stability in Black Sea region, and a question of our export and import, which is completely and very important for Ukrainian industry, for Ukrainian economy. So the Crimea could be and maybe must be a main goal of this conflict, but not Crimea itself, like stability in the Black Sea region, which is Russian try to dominate, try to cut our export and import supply lines. And this is I think it's a common problem for all Black Sea states.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So just so I understand, does that mean you think it would be okay to cede the Donbass to Russia?
I think if we get into realistic, real policy, we have to say it's no way to liberate Donbass near 5-10 years for us, even for Crimea it could be. But we could get only goal we have right now to do not give Russia ability to seize more territory of Ukraine, to force Russia decline this military way to spoke with Ukraine. I think the main reason and my main idea that we need not Russian-Ukrainian negotiation. We need negotiation in the frame of the all Eastern Europe security or European security. And it could be multiplied negotiations. And we have to make a new system of security in Europe, because previous Potsdam-Yalta, so-called system, which was created in 1945, do not work at all.
Okay, so I just want to understand. So you would not support negotiations between Ukraine and Russia now?
Yeah, it's absolutely impossible. It's very stupid to spoke about this negotiation. So we have to spoke about, and we have to negotiate for the all new security system for Europe, including real interest of all sides of this problem. Because Russians start this war from the ultimatum, which is says Russia and not NATO have to go back to the border of 1997. This is the main problem for Russia. Russians do not feel itself from insecure. And we could laugh about this. We could say we never have some aggressive plan against Russia, but Russians think so. And they ready for diet and kill for this security question. So we need a huge negotiation on both sides, all NATO members, all UN members, all neutral states, which is interesting in the security in Europe, to create a new so-called Potsdam-Yalta system. Because alternative, it will be 10 years of war or 15 years of war.
Does that mean a different system to NATO? Do you believe that NATO needs to be replaced with a new system?
I think the NATO have to discuss with Russia, Belarus, and other sides of this conflict what is real guarantee of not using the military force in Europe to decide the political questions, and create a new system to decide enough political questions. Do not use in the center of the Europe the military power. This is a problem for me. And I even could add, I am absolutely pessimistic of this. I think we face 10 years of war, 10 or 15 in Europe, because the system of sort of opposites we have right now, it's a very huge and do not could be decided by the negotiations. But for me, for my consciousness, I have to be a person who provides this idea openly. And when I will be getting elder at the end of my life, I could say for me, I was a person who provide idea of a new system of collective security in Europe, and instead the war, 10 of years of war.
So your idea then that you want to be remembered for is, what is it exactly? I mean, a new system, fine, but is it a specifically Eastern European kind of treaty of some kind involving Poland and Baltic countries and all of the countries that border Russia, or what is it?
It have to all actors, Great Britain, Germany, France, United States, all of NATO and UN members, and both Russia, Belarus, and I don't know, China, Iran, so-called acts of evil, to decide a new. What we really need is a new system of collective defense in the world, but at least in Eastern Europe, you know. I don't think we have the political ambition and political ability to make this system right now. I think we face a war, and Ukraine will be not one country in this war, I think, next 10 years.
Do you think that bilateral negotiations between Ukraine and Russia could have worked earlier in the process? I mean, there's a lot of discussion around those early months, March, April, May of 2020. There were the talks in Istanbul. How close were they to a deal?
Yeah, I was a member of the Istanbul process, and it was most profit drift of the agreements we can have. They even closed the two very, very dangerous for Ukraine previous agreements, like a Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. And this agreement can contain even the question of Crimea, to 10 years of discussion, or 15 years of discussion of status of Crimea. And that means security for the region, for our export and import.
So why did it not happen?
I don't know. Nobody knows. Because mid-agreement in Istanbul came back for the Kyiv, and after Bucha, we heard from president we stopped the negotiations. Next meeting have to be in 9 of April, and it's 2 or 3 April, it's with the 3rd or 2nd April, it was declined.
So the sequence, just so I get this clear, the sequence is, did you go to Istanbul?
Yes.
So you came back with the negotiating party?
Yes, completely. Yes, it was successful. We opened the champagne bottle, you know, for this. Because
you
it
actually
was,
opened a bottle of champagne in Istanbul?
Yes, because it was completely successful negotiations. When they start the war, they provide to five or six attacks on the Kyiv. And every rebuild attacks, they get out one of the punct of this agreement. So the demilitarization, denazification, something Russian language, Russian church, and something like this. In the end of the month, it was one question, not decision questions, the question of amount of Ukrainian armed force in the peacetime. And president says, I could decide this question in directly with Mr. Putin. This Istanbul agreement was a protocol of intentions, and it was completely 90% preparing for the directly meeting with Putin and Zelensky. It was the next step of negotiations.
So what part did Bucha play in that? What was the sequence, and how did Bucha derail that process?
I know the president was shocked about Bucha. All of us were shocked about Bucha. And I was in Bucha, and the second day of the Russian forces was repelled. And he started to think in how he could provide negotiations and meet Putin directly after this. He's completely changed by face when he came in Bucha and see what has happened. A lot of people say the Prime Minister Johnson came in Kyiv and declined these negotiations with Russia. But I don't know exactly, is it true or false?
The Prime Minister Boris Johnson definitely did come to Kyiv at that time.
Yes, but he came to Kyiv, but nobody knows except I think Mr. Zelensky and Boris Johnson himself what they spoke about. Because
what do you think? Do you think Boris Johnson was involved?
I don't know. I won't even say yes or not because it's very sensitive questions.
Just so I understand, then, was it that the troops withdrew and that the horrors of Bucha became visible during that time? They didn't actually take place during those days. Is that right?
The getting out, probably, I don't remember exactly, from the 2nd of the April. And I was in Bucha next day.
So you think Russia was sincere?
The president getting one more day later. So right. It could be 3rd or 4th of April. And next meeting have to be in 9th of April. So something happened in these 5 days. But we are the members of negotiations group. Was provided by the we stopped the any negotiations when we ask how it could be getting back. So the president says somewhere, sometimes, not now.
So something changed in Zelensky's
absolutely.
Mind during that
yes.
period.
Yeah, absolutely. And historical have to find answer what has happened these 5 days.
And do you think Russia was sincere that they would have stuck to that negotiation settlement, the intention, as you call it? Do you believe that you could have done that deal with Russia and they would have stuck to that deal?
Russians shows the readiness for still providing negotiations. We decline. We was a side which declined these negotiations. But now, after two years ago, I think it was unreal to make an agreement this time. The main reason for me is that it's a very easy way for Mr. Putin to change this Russian-Ukrainian war for war against anti-colonial war against global source against global West. And I think the system of oppositions between West and source is so huge. It's including the question of Israeli-Palestinian war, it's including the question of Taiwan, it's including a lot of different questions. The speed when the BRICS getting more shows me it's no way to make agreement because Russian-Ukrainian war, Russian invasions opened the box of Pandora which is a lot of huge numbers of problems, which is not could be insufficient by Ukrainian and Russian agreement. It's more and more highest level of problems.
Is it a world war?
I think it's a world war. It's an, not even world war. I think it's, it looks for me like a 13-year war, which is, was in the earlier of 17th century. For me, it looks like that in Europe. Because the modern age starts this time. And for me, it's now, it's if we get in philosophically, speaking philosophically, is the end of the modern era now. And the modern era start from the 30 years war, and have to be end by the 30 years war.
What do you mean by it being the end of the modern era?
The modern, period of humanity development, is ending. I think it's quite philosophical discussion. If you want, we could.
Our audience is very interested in this. Maybe, just to expand on it a little bit, you mean that the last 200 or 300 years of peace,
yes,
and development, you now think are coming to an end?
People, a lot of philosophers speaks about a lot of postmodern era right now. Even this discussion started at the end of the 13th. We know it's an even postmodernist philosophical movement. But I think I have some science, which is means the modern is end. I could try to explain one of them, one or two of them. What is modern for me? Modern is a huge factory. It's to get in all systems, like education, like health care, like military industry, or like a market, like a huge factories. Now, we have a lot of achievements which start to blow up this factory conceptions. First of all, we can say it's artificial intelligence and something like this, but the science says it's not be no way to standardization of the world.
You're saying that the project of standardizing the world, making everyone similar,
is
coming to an end.
Yes, and war is more, world is more, much more various than standardization. Mm. And what is the pretension from the global source to global West? You couldn't standardize us. We completely different on you. And your way of getting policy, your way of getting security, your way of getting cultural is completely, our way is completely another than yours. And we asking for rights to be another. Your way of standardization is not for us. And we're ready for the war, even for this. To fight with you and for our rights to be different.
Do you mean culture is
culture
different? So people, you think, will be defending their own cultures, being different from each other, and that is the change.
Not even culture, the way to do in policy, the way to do any human practice. It's a pretension for another modus vivendi, in another modus operandi. For this is a problem, and they ready to fight for this by the open war, which we can see now with Russia.
It reminds me a little bit of someone I know you were interested in the past, which is Alexander Dugin. I know you attended a conference with him back in the day. You were associated with the Bratstvo party. There was a kind of far-right or nationalistic movement. Mr. Dugin has a big philosophical idea about Eurasia and wars of civilizations. Do you still have sympathy with his worldview?
I never be in sympathy with Mr. Dugin because I was an officer of military intelligence of Ukraine and getting my military duty in Moscow when I was sitting with Mr. Dugin on one conference. But I have my own philosophical background, and we can see on the front line right now that some cultures like Russian political culture and Chinese political culture, Syrian, Iranian, is completely against the way to policy do previous 50, previous 70, and previous 300 years. this is a problem. We could see now in material way in the missiles which is getting on the heads of the Russian or the Ukrainian children. This is a main this is a main sign, not what is Mr. Dugin says, all right.
Okay, so cultures like Russia, like Iran, are so different from the West that they're now prepared to fight for their differences. Yes. Is that what
and
you're saying?
They start to fight against the system which was established in the world from this previous 300 years. First of all, it's a so-called Westphal Peace Agreement. And they're fighting against this main principle of the system.
So what about Ukraine in this new world order? Where does it belong? Does it belong with the West or does it belong with the non-Western group?
My problem of Ukraine and one of the main idea is what Ukraine still could found itself. Ukraine, the main question is for what we are living and what we are doing, for what we are dying. In Ukraine, like a society, like a culture, has a huge numbers of answers on these questions. We are completely very different. The main problem of Ukraine, some politicals, it's getting more like a more idea to recreate Ukraine, which is starting in 1991, like a polycultural and polynational state. Start to transform Ukraine for the monoethnic and monocultural country, like most of European countries, like Poland. It means they lost the territory, which is completely different, which is Russian spoke territory, for example, east of Ukraine, south of Ukraine. And a lot of Ukrainians, this 4.5 million of Ukrainians, which is didn't want to be recruited by the state, they didn't want to be recruited for this political idea. This is a problem because it's not a problem of social contract or not problem of, I don't know, that the good pension for retired military. It's questions for the future of Ukraine. I think a lot of Ukrainians do not want like a part of the project of mono nations.
Do you think Ukraine should be one nation in its 90s?
I don't. I think Ukraine have to be one political nations, but polyethnical and polycultural. Because if we want to hold Ukraine in same borders like in 1991, even officially we have 58 nationalities here in Ukraine. Unofficially, it's more than 100. A lot of languages, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different histories of the region. Ukraine is a state which is created from the parts of great huge empire, Austro-Hungarian, German, Polish, and Russian. And we have absolutely different traditions. You could imagine, because for Great Britons, for Britons, it's easy to understand. It's the same situation like Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and Britain.
So absolutely. Does that mean you think it should be more of a federation?
I don't know which is could be formed like politically and legally, but in fact, in philosophical way, we are federation in fact. Because south of Ukraine is completely different than the north of Ukraine. The east of Ukraine is completely different than west of Ukraine. And even neighbor regions in Ukraine have different tradition of wedding and different tradition of anything.
But why should it try to be one country in that case?
This is a question. Now we are practically can't answer on these questions. When we see the problem of recruiting, this problem of mobilization, now, it's they enlighten all our very deep philosophical and historical problems because people do not get in an army because not about the mostly about the dangers of wounded or deaths. They do not understand answer of the question for what we have to be one country and for what we have to be one state. For what reason we need Ukrainian state? Because a lot of them says, if the question state like this, give me ability to get out Ukrainian passport and get in for the Europe or for another country. A lot of these people says. This is the main superiority of Mr. Putin. Because Russians' recruitments knows for what they fight. They fight for great Russia, you know.
You don't believe then that there is a much stronger Ukrainian nationalism now than there was 2 years ago? Because by report, the fact of the invasion has brought Ukrainian people together You're saying that has not happened.
Ukrainian nationalism is an idea of less than 20% of Ukrainians.
And what about the remaining 80%?
I think the most of them, their ideas is ideas of multinational and polycultural country. And Mr. Zelensky, when he came in 2019 in the power, they getting just on this idea. They was not articulatory specifically, but it's was mean when they says, I have no any difference between the Ukrainian Russian language, probably in Ukraine, some of the Ukrainian language country. All are Ukrainians, but even with spokes different languages. One of the great criticism, what has happened in Ukraine last year, this idea on the emotional trauma of the war, this idea of Ukrainian nationalism, which has divided Ukrainian for the sorts of different people, Ukrainian speaking as well, your Russian speaking is the second sort of the people. It's the main dangerous idea and worse dangerous than Russian military aggressions. Because nobody from this 18% people want to die for the system in which they are the people of the second sort.
But you're planning to run to be president of Ukraine. How can you run for president if you don't believe that it holds together as a country?
Because I have an idea, which is, I call it so, fifth project, which is for me could unite the country back. And it's a completely specific political program, which is well known in Ukraine. It's mean we have a four political project in Ukraine: Russian, Soviet, and nationalist, and Euro integration projects. My idea is to collect the best from the all four projects and recreate a so-called fifth project, which is main idea of the united of Ukrainians, united to recognize all Ukrainians in our history, in our modernity, and in our future, like Ukrainians, whatever the language they live, whatever their language speaks, and whatever culture and tradition they hold, religion, tradition, or something like this. And it looks like very simple, but looks like it's United States of Ukraine, you know, like this.
Yeah, like a federal system.
Yes, federal system. Yes.
Do you think, practically, in terms of bringing this back to, you know, reality and military affairs and what the world should do next, having heard what you said about the differences in Ukraine and the Russian-speaking part and the West being so different, is the so-called Kissinger solution, where there is some kind of settlement with Russia and Russia takes certain provinces or they're supervised in a certain way and there is a kind of peace deal, does that look attractive?
I don't think so. For me, the price for Ukraine to get in the NATO and United States is a big war with Russia. I say this in 2019, openly, and it was in our media. And I think for price for West to get in Ukraine inside NATO and US, it's a big war with Russia. And collective West do not ready to pay this price. This is a problem. And for me, it's completely unrealistic to be in, for Ukraine to even hope to be a part of European Union and NATO. It's impossible in this real situation.
And yet you don't want it to be part of Russia either.
And no, I completely and very strong stand on position of independent Ukraine. But this independent Ukraine, for me, have to go the way by Israel, by South Korea, probably, mostly. Then like Azerbaijan, like Turkey, probably not for like part of Russia. In no way for be part of Russia and not be a part in if we be could have to be realistic, not part of the NATO and United Nations. It's have to be a neutralized country, strong, with a great and deep relationship with the collective West, because we're part of Europe. We are European nation historically, but now it's completely unrealistic, not from our side, from the West side.
But your vision then is for Ukraine to be neither part of Russia nor part of the EU or NATO, to be have a kind of special status as a borderland country that contains many different peoples within it.
Yes, and one hand is disadvantageous. Another sense, it could be, if we will be effective and clever, we could use it like great advantages, like infrastructure and logistic corridors, like multicultural transformer, you know, that which is could understand both sides, Europe and Russia and Asia countries.
Like a translator role.
They're like a translator, really. We could get an ability, and but we have to understand the real situation. We have to be ambition to get in this role, and we could play, I think, a very important role in the Eastern Europe security, first of all, Eastern Europe logistic, Eastern Europe stability. And for this, it could be perspective aid for all Ukrainian foreign policy. But the foreign policy is completely a mirror of in interior policy. We have to change it inside ourselves before getting this type of idea for Europe, for our neighbors.
It's been very interesting hearing your program, Mr. Arestovich. Thank you for sharing it. I guess my final question is, if you do get back to Ukraine, and if there is an election, and if you're allowed to run in it, do you think there's any chance you'll win?
I don't know, but I have to give a chance to people who believe me.
Okay. Oleksiy Arestovich, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
We will no doubt be criticized for interviewing Oleksiy Arestovich. Too left, too right. Maybe I was too soft, too hard. He was too critical of Zelensky. Maybe he used to be far right. He's just an opportunist, etc. But I got to tell you, I found that a fascinating discussion. He didn't answer all my questions, but hearing a very different view about that complicated and vast country was new to me. And at the very least, I hope you found it interesting also. My suspicion is that we haven't heard the last from him. Thanks for tuning in. This was Unheard.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.